Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. And after 6 odd months of Talent League footy, we've finally got our two winners. And I'm one of your co-hosts, Nathan Seppi. I'm joined by my other co-host, Jonty Ralph Smith. Jonty, a pretty successful weekend of footy for you in a few different ways. But we've got our two winners. The two winners you didn't predict, and we got a bit of stick for it, actually, some of our predictions in the end. But what did you make of it all? And what did you think of the two winners in the end?
Yeah, I think that Sandy were the most classy outfit throughout the season. I think we did see that, particularly in the last few weeks of the season. We've just got so many different players who are able to stand up. Obviously, I sat here this time last week saying that I thought Eastern's role players were going to be able to nullify them. That didn't materialise, and Sandy's class and fitness won out in the end. And yeah, Eastern Rangers versus Oakley, it was probably a little bit of a case of the opposite, where Eastern came into the season with the squad that was seen as the most talented, but then it was actually the structure of Oakley that won out. So yeah, a couple of really good games of footy, and the weather really put it on as well. So it was good, and the way they were playing, free-flowing games, we're able to see good ball movement. And I thought the weapons of players were really on show. So I think we're going to start with the boys' grand final, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We'll get started with that. And the Dragons, I mean, they won pretty convincingly in the end, 17-10, 112 to 10-9, 69. And a bit of an arm wrestle, back and forth early. Eastern were up at quarter time. Sandy used the win pretty well in the second quarter. And that's sort of where they started to get a bit of a gap on, and Eastern couldn't really close it. They were always within two or three goals. Sandy kicked away, I think it was about, what was it at three quarter time? About four goals. Eastern got it to, I think, 14 points was the closest. And there was, I think, 14 minutes left. And then Sandy kicked three in a row, and it was pretty much done and dusted from there. But yeah, big win from Sandy. And it was, it just was really individual talent stood out in the end.
Yeah, it was. And I think Eastern sort of threw a little bit of a punch at the start of every quarter was probably the way I read it. But then after that initial 6 or 7 minute burst, they just didn't quite have the ability to go with them for the rest of the quarter. And it was a hot day. Icon Park is a big ground, so fitness came into it, no doubt, as well. And like you say, it was some of that talent. So I think in the first quarter in particular, it was probably Levi Ashcroft that really got them going. We know he was a big part of Sandy's premiership win in 2022 as a double bottom major. He could go for the three-peat next year. I know we were discussing it on the day. But yeah, he certainly got them started on the right note, finished with 19 and a goal, and was an important part of the midfield. But I thought the real story of the day from the midfield was Cooper Lord. He's one that I remember speaking about last week, saying he's probably their most important player with what he provides from a defensive point of view. So I know the club were really happy to see him on the big stage, having done the dirty work throughout the season, be able to produce some really important offensive play throughout the game, as well as obviously still being able to provide that presence in there, which is what has allowed Sandringham to be as formidable as what they've been throughout the season.
Yeah, for sure. He was massive in the end. And yeah, that defensive presence, it's like if you can have that in your team in general, and as a player is a terrific trait, but to have it your team as well is terrific. I'll shift the attention to one forward that played probably one of his best games of the season, which was Cal Shadir. He's played good games throughout the season. It's his kicking that's let him down, and that's always, we've said, he set shot kicking, you know, He knows how to take a good grab. He knows how to present well, and he gets himself in good spots. He just usually lets himself down with that set shot accuracy. But he was really good, held himself in good stead, was just confident, and that confidence grew as the game went on, and thought he was really powerful in the end. And it was that extra boost the forwards needed, because I think I alluded to it last week, they were always under 50%, but would have, you know, over 25 scoring shots, and 17-10 tells you how much of a big difference it makes. And they killed the game early. So, yeah, that was, and Deer was part of that.
Yeah, and he was. And I think the fact that he did it on Cooper Trembath as well would give him a lot of confidence, give a lot of his watchers a lot of confidence. Obviously, a Hawthorn father-son prospect, and really enhanced his prospects on the day. And the other thing that was really impressive to me was when he went into the ruck. I was really surprised when I saw that it was him that was going into the ruck. I was certain that it was going to be Archer May, that big body, just to be able to create a little bit of that competitiveness in the ruck. But they backed Cal Shadir. He's more that athletic type who's got that leap, and he got a couple of centre clearances and got it going forward, and he did finish with a lot of hit outs and a lot to advantage as well. So I thought he provided something a little bit different and showed something a little bit when he went into the ruck. He probably doesn't do that at the next level just with the height he's at, but it was good to see what he was able to produce. So, yeah, certainly he was one that was impressive. Another one, if you go down the other end of the field, and there's so many storylines, I think, in the back line, and, Lockie Boss is certainly one of those. The first 5 minutes of the game, and it was probably a product of Sandy in the first quarter in particular getting smashed at centre clearance. They just allowed Easton a few times just to bust out the front of centre clearance, and it just gave the Easton forwards a really good look one-on-one, which made it pretty difficult for Lockie Voss. But after the first 5 or 10 minutes, I thought he nullified Riley Weatherall, who's that barometer inside 50, really well. He's really athletic. He's attracting a little bit of interest from AFL clubs. He's had some really important roles on Michael Rudd in recent weeks, as well as a couple of times on Nate Caddy. And then he's been able to translate that onto Riley Weatherall. They've had a lot of faith in him, and I think he really justified it on the day. So, yeah, full props to him. And even someone else like a Nate Sullivan continues to play his role really well in that line. So lots of credit goes to him. Doesn't get many touches, but certainly what he does is his opponent never gets off the chain. And that again happened. They've got so many of those sort of medium-sized forwards. Isaac Tanzimat's one, Liam George is another. None of those really had huge impacts on the scoreboard, and he was a big reason why. And Billy McGee, Gallen Birdie on Nick Watson, that was a good battle to watch as well.
Yeah, it was. It was interesting to see Billy. He was keeping up very well. And we sort of said Nick Watson hasn't really had a huge impact in the last couple of weeks. He does his role pretty well. He had a really nice string of play actually on down our side of the ground in that third quarter, which was this sort of moment of the game, but he nullified him quite a lot. He wasn't able to hit the scoreboard, at least get good looks at it. He had a couple dribbles and snaps or whatever, but they weren't efficient looks. And he's played that lockdown role so well. We saw it last week against Tom Anastasopoulos, where kicked two goals early, but then kept him quiet. And, the week before with Northern, he was his rebound in prowess. That was really good. So
yeah,
I can 100% agree with you. And I want to just quickly go back to Nate Sullivan. When you talked about nullifying like Isaac Tanzimat, he kicked a goal in every one of his games, but two. One was early against Dandenong and one was on Saturday. To keep someone like him quiet, who is usually the barometer of that team, I think that, again, a testament to that back line and what they were able to achieve on the day.
Yeah, certainly. And just to finish on Billy McGee, Gallen Birdie, sorry, we're going a little bit back and forth here, but we do want to sort of cover everything and storylines. But he was able to nullify Nick Watson in a school game where he's Kevin's boy. Is Billy McGee, Gallen Birdie, and showed really positive school form, that defensive and offensive aspect to his game, which has come through, as you say, in his talent league form. So he's done it on Nick Watson twice now this season. So that's a real ode to him. And there is mild draft interest in him. And I know you put that on the radar a couple of weeks ago, Nathan. And certainly I've got no doubt that that's heated up in the last couple of weeks based on what he's shown and based on what I've heard. So yeah, that's a few really nice stories from the back line, which doesn't necessarily have the Vic Metro players. Obviously, they've got Ollie Murphy, who's probably going to get drafted and played his role really well. And Matt Carroll's come in the last couple of weeks. But some of those other lesser lights were also able to shine. And I guess if you move back up forward, it's remiss of us not to touch on Will Brown and probably should have touched on him, to be fair. But wins the best on ground medal. I thought his speech after receiving that medal was outstanding and probably showed that level of maturity why he got the Vic Metro captaincy. And everyone talks about his leadership at Sandringham. I think that's a real part of the package you get if you are going to draft Will Brown. And he's one who has been able to hit the scoreboard pretty regularly in the last few weeks. And was really important on the day and stood up, seized his moments when they came. So 18 touches, probably felt like he had a little bit more than that. Obviously kicked the 3 goals and went into the midfield a little bit as well. So an excellent outing from him. And that's one that will no doubt enhance his draft prospects.
Oh, 100%. It was great to see him hit the scoreboard in an important game. And he's been doing that the last couple of weeks. I guess the criticism of the goals he's kicking are they're usually a lot closer to goal and not those sort of more difficult outside further kicks. But I guess you look at it and think, well, you'd rather him hit the scoreboard and he's making an impact and that's all you need to do. And he was doing it really well. Really nice goal in that last quarter as well. That type of captain's goal that pretty much sealed it. And we didn't expect him to win the medal based off like when you looked at the stats, but it was a deserving winner based off what he's done for that team, that club all year. A testament to what he's done and great to see him get that medal.
Yeah, the running patterns as well is probably another big thing. He offers, he gets high, is able to take some marks. He might not have taken as many marks as he has in previous weeks on grand final day, but that's another element of his game that he's shown throughout the final series. Will Brown and then a couple of other sort of forwards that I think provided really important, I guess, ground level ability, because we know, and we talked about it going into the game, that if Eastern nullify them aerially, then, you know, are they going to be able to have any sources to goal? But yeah. Firstly, to those tall forwards, I thought their pressure was outstanding, and I thought the midfield's ability to push up and apply that pressure was also a big part of the win. But yeah, lots of credit has to go to Charlie Harrop. I thought he's a taller player, but he was able to play a little bit smaller when he needed to. Josh Dolan is one who got cut in pre-season, played really strong form for Brighton Grammar, and then is able to come back in and has held down that 23rd man spot in the last few weeks, and that sixth forward, so his running's been really important. And then also another one that's been really important there is Harvey Johnston. His leadership throughout the season's been really good, and Murphy Reid played forward as well, so he's one who kicked a couple of goals, and I thought he was one who, when Sandy got going, was you know obviously was one who was a big part of that, but he kicked a couple of goals at important times, and we know what he's able to do in the midfield, but I just thought he showed a little bit more of that secondary position ability and aptitude on the day than he perhaps has in previous weeks.
Yeah, 100%. I just want to touch on Johnson and O'Leary. I mean, they were part of that offensive press that really helped Sandy get so many looks going forward. Charlie Harrop was very unselfish. That's something I noticed as well. I reckon he created two goal assists just from his ball movement. Probably had the option to kick two goals, but just finds that one over the top. Just smart football, you know. Those are moments that can stick out arguably even better, you know, than just the other things. But, yeah, those were just things I think deserved a good mention.
I think he reads the game really well. And, yeah, like you say, he took his moments and was able to see the game almost before he got the ball. And that's something that's always a feature of his, I feel like. And yeah, he took a couple of marks, which showed his body work as well. So his second game back in, a little bit more game time than last week, not significantly. But yeah, he would have felt good to get back out there after a finger injury sort of restricted his last 4 or 5 weeks. And then I guess to finish off, Archer May kicked a couple of goals and was that big body that Sandy needed. How much weight put on his body work and what he's shown at talent league level remains to be seen, and you know, different people will have different opinions, because he is that year older and he does have that mature body, so he probably needs to show that he can do it at VFL level. He's obviously Richmond VFL listed, so interested to follow his progress throughout the next couple of years. Archer May and Archie Roberts, who's one that you like watching off halfback, was able to sneak forward and kick a goal late in the piece, first talent league goal, and he was pretty happy with it as well.
Sudden his first goal. That's news to me. Well, I didn't know it was quite the goal. It happened down the end, but I was standing in that last quarter. Great to see. I mean, just a great game from him in general. It was lovely to see him get a second medal as well. And Luke Lloyd's probably just the last one to touch on. Did his role to perfection. He's showing why he's up, got the interest up, and took a great contested mark there, like deep inside 50, like struggling one as well. Really got down, and he was good again. So that was. I feel like we've wrapped. Yeah, that's unless you've got any from the Sandy side.
About the whole Sandy team almost, but that's the sort of game. As much as Eastern did throw it to Sandy and did make it really competitive, when you look at it on paper, I feel like so many players won their positions, and that ultimately proved too good for Sandy. But yeah, Luke Lloyd would have been happy to have that performance. He's probably been a little bit quieter in the last few weeks, so really important to show a little bit in that last game. From an Eastern perspective, the clear standout, and to some people, he was probably best on the ground above Will Brown, above Cooper Lord, above Cal Shadir, was Tyson Schruck. 37 disposals and was a one-man band, really, in the midfield. Or Christian Moraes was very good as well, but I thought his ability to fend off and get it going forward, get the ball driving towards the teeth of goal, was really important for Eastern, and when they did throw their punches, it was generally attributable to his work in the midfield.
Yeah, 100%. It was that two-way running again from him as well. He just stood up and gave them that lift when they needed it, and probably did stand up when the midfielders weren't taking that accountability, moving the ball. He just pushed forward, especially in that last quarter. What a goal he kicked to put him, I think it was within 14 points. And it started with a good segue to Josh Tovey, who we both thought played pretty well in the end, did some good things and stood up given the pressure they were under in that forward 50, but some good one percenters, and he took the game on late, which was quite impressive to watch, which led to that Schruck goal in the end, which was quite good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, Josh Tovey was really good, and he was one that I thought that the Sandy forwards were going to have to be really wary of coming into the day. I thought what the midfielders did really well was they lowered their eyes. It was clearly a directive because I think you saw it going inside 50, where previous weeks you might have seen them just back their toes to be able to take the big contested marks. But they did look for hit-ups. I think Cal Shadir, as we talked about, probably offered that on the left against Cooper Trembath and used his sort of athletic profile. But yeah, Josh Tovey was one that when the ball was in his vicinity, he wasn't getting out marks. So I thought he was very good. And Liam George, just one who, yes, he didn't hit the scoreboard, but again, I thought he showed a different side to his game. I thought he applied a lot of pressure and did look likely inside 50 and had a couple of moments to generate scoring opportunities. It just didn't quite materialise and probably wasn't the Rangers' day, and that was probably emblematic of it.
Yeah, I'd agree, and Ryan Cantwell was the only one I personally thought, we sort of split on this, but I personally thought he had some good moments at ground level and he was pretty clean, especially in that first quarter to get the ball moving. I thought did some nice things to just get a bit of recognition. But that wraps it up really in terms of the boys' granny, and we move now to the girls, which unfortunately for Easton, they didn't win either, which is a bit of a shame. It was the same that happened with Dandenong last year, and you know, for the whole club to get that far in both programs, it's would be a little disappointing, obviously. But Oakley got up 6-7-43 to the Rangers 5-6-36. And this was 50-50 for the first half, where both teams went in at 16 apiece at halftime. Big, big third quarter from Oakley. And you said at the end of the third that there was a goal they kicked late that pretty much, I mean, it did win it for them in the end, because Easton, as you would expect, nothing to lose in the last quarter. They kicked two in a row, and I think if Oakley didn't kick that last goal in the third quarter, they would have gone up Easton. So it did just give them that one goal gap in the end, and Oakley kicked a goal late to bridge it to two goals, and Easton kicked one on the siren, which left it at 7 points. But I'll start with you. I mean, we'll start with Sienna Tellerini. We have to talk about her first, and I'm glad I picked her as my standout player in the final series, and she did that in this grand final especially. She was terrific off halfback. Just one that executes her role so well. Smart footballer, just a very smart footballer. And she has the addition of having such polished skills on the field with her kicking and her rebounding.
Yeah, regular watchers of this podcast would know that I love an intercepting halfback. There's probably no player on the field that I love more, and that's stayed back 3 or 4 years now. So quite often I will say to Nathan or to whoever I'm sitting with watching the game, geez, she or he must have taken 7 or 8 or 9 intercept marks. That's such an impact aerially. And then I'll go onto the Talent League app and they've only actually been credited with 5 or 6 marks. Yeah. And a couple of them might have been from teammates. But she was credited with 12 marks. So I am pretty confident to say she would have taken about 8 intercept marks. And I think that just speaks to her impact on the game. It's very rare that you see that at any level of footy. Obviously, the AFL maximum, they play longer quarters, is 10 from Darcy Moore and a host of other players. But yeah, no, she was one that her ability to read the ball aerially throughout the season has been really good. It went up another notch on grand final day. And then, yeah, her ability to clear out and make the right decisions going or, you know, coming out of defence, I thought was really important. So, yeah, when Easton were trying to go forward, it just seemed like they kept kicking it to her. She knew where they were going to go. And yeah, it was a really impressive performance. 32 touches in the back half probably speaks as well to the fact that Easton perhaps didn't have enough directive going forward at times. And yeah, she was able to mop up from the back really well. So yeah, and I think the other thing from an Oakley point of view is their draft prospects played well. Obviously, Sienna Tellerini is a bottom major, but I thought Lara Hausegger had a good game. I thought Amy Karras-Brett showed quite a lot on the wing throughout the day as well. And she's one who's right on the fringe and would have really appreciated having these extra 3 games to show what she can do, and has finished the season on a really high note. And Gemma Rigoni had a few of her runs, the trademark runs that she has every day, every game that she plays. So I think that would have been a real positive from an Oakley Chargers coaching point of view, that these players that are looking to get drafted have used these last couple of games in particular to I guess provide themselves a launch pad and show everyone what their weapons are.
Oh, 100%. One I want to talk about, Georgia Jackson, one that I put in my grand final preview graphic, if you saw that on the social media, that they needed midfielders to kick goals. That was pretty pretty much the answer for Oakley, and it was sort of proven last week as well. When the midfielders kick goals, that's usually when they win, because there is a lot of reliance sometimes on Emma McDonald to kick their goals. And, you know, she's a great forward. You would always want to kick to her. And she did her job well. In terms of a midfielder who went, made an impact going forward, provided that press and was good in transition as well to stop Easton, because Easton were getting the ball moving. They just sort of lacked that last finishing touch inside 50, because they got their looks for sure. But yeah, I thought Georgia Jackson was quite impressive and just did her role really well in the end.
Yeah, you touch on Emma McDonald. I think they've become a little less reliant on her in the back
of
the season, which has been really good from an Oakley point of view. But yeah, I thought the battle between herself and Delaney Madigan was a really interesting one to watch. For most of the day, I thought Delaney Madigan managed that really well, and she took some intercept marks herself, and she was able to get it to ground level and take Emma McDonald away from the hot spot and, you know, force her away from the drop of the ball. So I thought it was a really good battle. However, Emma McDonald did have 3 or 4 really important aerial moments in the last quarter when the game was on the line. So yeah, perhaps you look at it and say that over the course of the day, Delaney Madigan won, but Emma McDonald would still be pleased that she was able to have the impact when the game was on the line.
100%. Michaela Lee is one we should talk about, because
she is.
Look, we haven't mentioned her. I don't know if we've mentioned her this year. And it was the pace. It's the pace that was, you know, that blew us away a little bit. And she's been doing that all year. I guess it's the skill element that may have let her down at times, but she's got that pace. And some of those runs inside forward 50, that ball was moving that quickly. That's what gave him those goal opportunities in the end. And even she was pushing real back sometimes and was moving out of half back with some pace. And yeah, she was just. She could have been one of like the top three on the ground, just with her in terms of impact overall. She created. She was, you know, tactically, she was that piece in the end.
14 touches and a goal, and I thought, yeah, she was that link player in the forward half, and yeah, provided them something that Easton probably didn't have with that dynamism that she had at ground level with the pace and athleticism that she provides. The other one, Charlotte Brewer.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of I don't want to say hype, but her character lends itself to being a leader next season. They've obviously got a lot of top-end talent next season, and she's one in defence who did some really impressive things on the day and was, again, really important when Easton went forward, was a real cool presence and is one to keep an eye on going forward next season. So, yeah, I thought she was probably another one from the Chargers who use the day to enhance her prospects. Obviously she's still got a year to go in the program, so yeah, we'll look forward to tracking her journey.
It'll be hard to beat Oakley next year. I feel like they're going to get even they'll get even better. And
well, yeah, you think about the fact that Chloe Bowne was missing a double bottom eight. They've got a lot of those 2007 born talents that they're really excited about, Chloe Bowne leading those, and they were able to beat Easton, who don't have as many bottom ages or as many top-end bottom ages. They're still going to be one of the stronger sides next season, mind you, with the young list. So I assume they're only going to get better. We will move on to Easton, though. And I think Laura Stone started the day like a house on fire and maintained that level of intensity throughout. Played her best footy in the midfield, went back a little bit as well. But yeah, she's one who certainly showed why she's been talked about as a top 5, top 10 draft prospect, just with her desperation as well. There were some defensive efforts, but certainly when she put the ball in hand, she didn't waste a touch.
Oh, she was she was going to win that game for them. If there was any player that was going to win the game on their own, not obviously not on their own, but she was just that player, and she was great. I was going to touch on those desperation acts in that, I think it was the third quarter, just those little moments kept him in the game in the end, and she was terrific. That run and drive, you can't beat it, and especially like that first quarter was electric. She just, everywhere the ball was, she was just moving everywhere. She was terrific to watch. Ava Campbell, good again. I think she backed up. You obviously said that prelim, and I think she backed that up pretty well. Just her defensive intercept presence, she's there, she knows where to fill the gap. I thought she was really good. She just backed up a good performance, one that definitely benefits from playing good football at this time of the year.
Yeah, I think I back her a lot more now when I see the ball going into Easton's defensive half and towards her to take the mark. more than I did at the start of the season. I think she's really clean overhead. She's shown that in the last few weeks. So I think, yeah, I've been really impressed with what I've seen from her. She's obviously cool as well. And she and Grace Babba probably both formed a really important defensive duo on the day, and Delaney Madigan, as we've touched on. But Grace Babba is really, really good defensively, and that's probably something that can fly under the radar. It certainly has for me in recent weeks, but then in recent weeks I've really noticed it, because she does provide that bounce and bubble coming out and does have that real athleticism, and that's something we're going to see a lot of next year. I think people should get really excited about what she's able to provide. She's really watchable, but she rarely gets goals kicked on her, because she is the sort of player that references off her opponent and defends first. And I thought that was really evident on the day.
100%. I mean, that to me, that's not even what sticks out. It's her 1% is, like, in terms of defensive efforts, that she might lose a contest, but she'll immediately follow it up and make it a contest. It's just that second effort, the 1% as she does it, I think, stand out. And it was evident all the way back in preseason.
Yeah, it was.
When she, you know, barely had any talent league games. I don't know if she did play a game by that point. That was probably her first.
Against Dandenong in preseason.
Yeah.
Same one, yeah, out at Hillside. Yep.
Yeah, so she was electric there, and she was good. Pisano is one I think we sort of have to talk about, because she kicked three goals. She kicked a pretty clutch goal late, in that fourth quarter that I think bridged, you know, put the gap within reach. Two goals were from free kicks, in terms of one was a free kick she had, and one was just play on and she kicked a goal. But three goals nonetheless in the grand final, you have to acknowledge it. You know, not many players can do that, and she was the main goal kicker in it, the leading goal kicker. So, yeah, you can't go without mentioning her in this conversation.
Yeah, and you talk about Oakley's structure. I thought the way their defence operated shut her down pretty effectively, yet she still breaks through for three goals, and she's been doing it all the amount of opposition coaches you'll speak to who'll say, I was actually really pleased, and I've watched the tape back. The way Ed played on Alicia Pisano was really impressive, and I thought in hand the draft prospects, she's just a really good player and had three good moments and happened to convert. It just seems to happen week after week after week with Alicia Pisano. How do you shut her down? I don't know. And good luck to AFLW coaches in the next 5 or so years. She's one that's going to excite plenty of people. But yeah, that goal in the fourth quarter, she kicked two goals in a row in the fourth quarter, one of those from a holding ball free kick, like you said, and then a few minutes later, and just there you sort of thought there's no way she can do it as well. Obviously talk about Laura Stone dragging her team over the line, but you just thought if she gets two or three hooks, this game's going to be over. So yeah, incredible season from her, and she will she'll have a lot of confidence going forward with her career at senior level. Jess Vukic is an interesting one, had the clear ascendancy in the ruck. Did Eastern completely use it to their advantage? Probably not. Probably didn't get the midfield ascendancy they're accustomed to. And probably a little part of it comes back to, I think we were speaking about it on the day, that Eastern haven't been challenged on the scoreboard in recent weeks. They've had the finals on paper, certainly, and results would certainly suggest that as well. Then Oakley, who have had to really fight their way through Calder, who have been competitive at times this year, and obviously Dandenong, extremely unlucky to miss out. So, yeah, perhaps that midfield synergy when they were under pressure just broke down a little bit, but Jess Vukic still did win that ruck battle head-to-head.
Yeah, I would agree, but I also think that in both teams, it was a bit of a scrap at the contest, and I think even if she did have the advantage on the day, which she did, when the ball went to ground, it was very contested. It was just, you know, I still think she had a pretty good impact, just, I guess, when the ball went to ground, neither team was really getting any good movement. It was really out of the D50 where the movement started and the ground opened up, which it certainly did, because that's a pretty big ground for the girls. They only played one game all year, which was the Rebels and the Suns Academy. So, the girls don't play there very often. And then the last one, Hayley McLaughlin, still proved why she's the best winner in the state. I think she's just so classy with her ball movement. She provides very good run and just fun to watch. Knows how to play her role and love, just one you know loves playing her role very well and loves her football. And I think she did really well in the end with her ball movement, just involved in those chains moving forward, I think. And that's what helped Easton get that ball going forward. And you know, I think it just comes down to their polish inside 50. It just wasn't as strong as what Oakley's was, but it was a very even contest
Yeah, and not as strong as what theirs has been in the last few weeks as well. I remember against Northern, yeah. I thought the polish was what separated the teams, particularly early, where Northern had opportunities but just didn't quite have the polish. But yeah, on this day it was Eastern that didn't have the polish. Yeah, and I thought Hayley McLaughlin worked back defensively really well. So we know what we're going to get from her week in, week out. And she's, like you say, she's a really good one to watch. They were the main standouts, and that probably concludes our grand final wrap. We've still got a couple of things we're going to touch on. We've got a game this weekend. It's the last game really that we're going to see this season before our attention shifts to next year, and this in a lot of ways does have next year flavor about it. Obviously it's the 2024 draft prospects, it's the annual under 17s futures game on the MCG played on AFL grand final day. It's great that the youngsters are able to be part of the action on such a big day on the AFL calendar, and we get to see them really show their weapons on the big stage. So, yeah, that's played in the morning of AFL Grand Final Day, Saturday the 30th of September. You'll be able to catch that on the AFL Live app if you want to watch that. So keep your eyes out for it. We're going to go through three players each that we're looking forward to watching. You can go to the AFL website, who will announce in the coming days the teams for that game. The squad of 40 has been announced of players who are going to play. It's just they haven't been broken up into teams yet. But yeah, the teams don't really matter. No one cares about the result on this day. It's all about who's able to show. So we will go through three players each, and I'll start with you, Nathan. Who's your first player that you're looking forward to watching?
My first player, Sam Lawler, GWV Rebels. Quite in, you know what, like I think we saw some very good glimpses at talent league level. As a bottom age, I don't think he really got to show his max potential, which you don't expect yet. I thought the game, the elimination final against Geelong, he was very good moving the ball forward, and he's just a rough and tough, loves the footy. I'm very excited to watch him on that stage. I think he's just one that will thrive. It's weird. You don't know what to expect from these boys on that stage. It's as well with no tactics and everything, what do you do and how do you play, how unselfish/selfish do you be? And yeah, no, I'm excited. I think he's one that will just thrive under that pressure and environment and take it all in.
He's certainly one I'm looking forward to watching from the perspective of he's one that's usually really clean when there is pressure applied and it's a big stage, and they do feel that, I guess, intensity is his cleanliness, which is something that can desert some players, going to be able to stand up to it. So given that that's a big strength of his, it's something I'm looking forward to seeing. The first player I'll touch on is Murphy Reid. He's obviously been given a different role for Sandy, as we've touched on in the last few weeks, playing that half forward role and providing that run. He looks best in the midfield, where he's able to step through traffic really well and get the ball going forward. It'll be interesting to see whether he does get some midfield time and rotates forward or does start at half forward. But regardless, I think he comes in off a six-day break as well. There aren't too many players that are coming in having played last week. So how he can back up from that taxing game will be interesting to see. But he's one that, if he's able to play anywhere near his best, it'll be a really exciting day. And I think a lot of people will enjoy watching him.
100%. Zach Johnson, second player for mine. I think this is a good game in terms of, obviously, at Northern, there's quite a big reliance on him in that midfield. He was one of the top midfielders. I guess this game, obviously, there's not that reliance for him to have such a big game. I think he'll be able to play with a lot of freedom, and he's already a terrific player to watch. He's the way he just plays, he's electric and uses the ball so well. He's tough in offensive movement. I just think we'll see a looser game from him, and he'll be able to show, you know, a few different elements that probably you don't see at talent league level, just because he does have to play quite a strict role, and he does that so well there. So, yeah, we'll love to see him and see the way he does play.
Yeah, I'm just going to group these two boys together because I think I talk about Murphy Reid coming off a six-day break. These two boys are both coming off long layoffs, either because their team has been knocked out early or in Isaac Kakko's case, because he did have the collateral ligament injury. So it's good that he was named in the squad and looks like he's going to play. That's what they've been prioritising, call to getting him up for this game. So hopefully we do see him there, and all indications are that we will. So he's a small forward that's electric, has goal sense, has speed, is able to dazzle opponents, and was very unlucky to miss Vic Metro. I thought he's the best bottom ager in a long, long list of bottom ages that missed Vic Metro. In a long list of players that made Vic Metro, he's probably the best one that missed. So, yeah, a small forward who has all the tricks and isn't much taller than Nick Watson, but certainly, you know, belies that with his ability overhead as well. So, yeah, he's one I'm looking forward to watching. And Murphy Reed, and Xavier Lindsay is one who had a hip flexor injury, so has missed the last couple of games of Gippsland season. And obviously Gippsland didn't go deep, but yeah, he's one who made a name for himself as an outside player. He's a good runner as well. And he's one that when he has gone into the midfield, he's stood up to the physicality of it. So can he do it at the next level, at essentially Vic Country level? It's equivalent to Vic Country level, really, because he's playing against the best in the country. Okay. Those. And whether he does get midfield time or he does get outside time, it will be interesting to see.
Then his Gippsland teammate, Ricky Mentho's my last player to watch. And I hope he's selfish. I really hope he's selfish because he's a player that, you know, that exciting to watch inside forward 50. When the ball goes to ground, he's just going to pick it up and do something special with it. So, yeah, I hope he's a bit selfish, but obviously he probably won't be. But I think, you know, give him his moment. He could get in the highlight reel very easily. And I see you've added one player, which, yeah, definitely deserves to be added, but doesn't technically has some relevance because they do play in the talent league for all of like 4 weeks. So yep. Do talk about him.
Yeah, Leonardo Lombard. So he's one who plays for the Gold Coast Academy. He'll go to Gold Coast next season. I can't see them not matching a bid on him if they get the opportunity to do so. He will go high in the draft, though, I think. So that'll be a wait and see. But he's one who played in the VFL Grand Final, the premiership for Gold Coast, which was played after the Coates League Boys Grand Final, and looks comfortable at the level. Speaking to a few different people who have watched him in the last couple of weeks, he's played 3 games of VFL and plays as a forward and has composure and has polish that matches it at the VFL level. So he's one that I'll be looking forward to watching as well, because his body is also very mature for someone who's 16. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, late in the year. He hasn't even turned 17 yet. And, yeah, looks very mature. And we both noticed him as well at that under-17s showcase game out at Avalon Airport Oval about 5 or 6 weeks ago as well. So that wraps up the players we're excited to watch. But we could talk about probably all 40 of them. And we certainly will throughout the course of next season, and keep an eye out for a piece we've got released that does profile a few of these boys and some more that will play in this game and some others who might have just missed out on this game. That'll come out at some stage in the next few days. So keep an eye on our channels for that. Just one more thing before we go. We had the Moorish Medal last week in the Talent League team of the year announced, as well as the girls' best and fairest. So the Moorish Medal went to Pat Hughes and Colby McKercher. I think Colby McKercher, a very deserving winner. No one would dispute that. And Pat Hughes has been very consistent for Geelong throughout the Talent League season as well. So that big-bodied mid who really stood up in the preliminary final, I thought was where he really impressed me against Andy with some of the clearances he was able to get. And, yeah, has been an important part of that engine room where there has been a bit of a lack of continuity with players going off school footy and also with Vic Country duties as well. So good to see those boys win. From your perspective, anyone you were surprised didn't poll better from a boys perspective?
Oh, I thought Joel Fraser, probably the only one I could say, played some very consistent football, probably had his patches up and down, that probably lost him some votes. But his teammate George Stevens finished third. He was, I think we sort of said he could win it. He was a good possibility. And I'm surprised he actually didn't win it when you look back at that. Every game, I think it was probably start of the season that would have lost him a bit of votes. But, yeah, no, that's probably not too many I could say surprised that didn't poll as high from your end.
Yeah, and from my end, probably I thought Xavier Lindsay might get a bit more when he went into the field. I thought he was really good. And Christian Moraes, I thought he's probably his first 4 games perhaps not as strong, but I thought after that he would poll in a lot of games and probably make up as much ground as I expected him to. Yeah, from a Team of the Year point of view, you can go and view the Team of the Year on the Coates League app or on the AFL website if you choose to do so. But just 2 players who I thought were unlucky to miss the Boys Team of the Year, we'll get to the Girls Team of the Year in a sec, was Angus Hasty. I thought he had a better year than some of the halfbacks that were named. I really liked watching him. I think he provides really important things aerially for Geelong and obviously provides that rebound and run as well. Another one who showed it in that preliminary final as well. And Caleb Windsor is one. My pet peeve is seeing midfielders named on the wing. And we saw the Olive this year. We did actually get genuine wingers, which was good for a change. But, yeah, we had Colby McKercher named on a wing and he's obviously an inside midfielder. That's his bread and butter, but we didn't actually get the clear standout winger in the competition, who's Caleb Windsor, who is able to kick goals and run defensively and impact games incredibly well, and certainly has done so since the championships. So, yeah, a couple of thought we're unlucky not to make the team of the year. From a girls' point of view, we move now, and the winner of that medal was a player that probably was unsurprising to both of us, Nathan.
Oh, yeah, Sara Howley. I mean, she's going to win it next year as well. Like, shouldn't be winning it this year.
Yeah.
In theory, but she was nuts.
Unbelievable effort for a bottom major. So, yeah, she polled as we expected her to poll. And, from a girl's point of view, team of the year wise, I thought Ali Simons might have made the ruck rather than Jess Vukic. I've really liked Jess Vukic's season, but I think. Yeah. Ali Simons just provides a bit more at ground level as that extra midfielder, her power. But yeah, she will get a chance and probably be named Team of the Year. Could almost write it in now if she doesn't get injured next year as that ruck. And Mika Morrissey is one who certainly back end of the year, I've probably found out a little bit more about how good she's been and how much they really value her down at Geelong. So I thought she might have made it as well.
Yeah, from my end, I think Lila Keck probably, I thought she deserved to get it considering what she did for the Pios, like, throughout the year, and I thought she played good enough football to get in. Unfortunately, she didn't, but I was pretty happy with that girls' team. I thought they nailed it pretty well. But I just want to quickly touch back on the medal and talk about two players who you wouldn't have expected to poll as high as they did, and number two, Abby Vecino, who we didn't expect to poll that high, but that's consistency for you and playing your role well each week, and yeah, deserved to get that second spot. And then Jade McClay, who, if you want an eye-catching player, you just got to watch her. Like, she's nuts. She's 07, so she's not next year. She's the year after. She finished third, which is nuts because she didn't even start playing until the second half of the year, just a little bit before it. So big, big effort from her and an Ash Centra. Good to see her up there as well. She was terrific for Gippy.
Absolutely, and that just about sums us up for this week. So yeah, absolutely outstanding, and congratulations to both the winners of the boys grand final, the Sandringham Dragons, and the girls grand final, the Oakley Chargers. Commiserations to the Eastern Rangers, and congratulations to their program on such an outstanding season. Yeah. Thanks to everyone for what they've provided. This season has been an outstanding season of Talent League footy, and we'll continue to come at you with podcasts week after week as we do make plenty of phone calls and try and find out what the latest is in the draft world. Obviously, the boys draft in November, the girls in December. So we will review the under-17s game next week and keep an eye on our channels for plenty more content. But for now, that's all we've got time for. So thanks for joining us.